Welcome to a very special edition of the Tilehurst End podcast with myself and Ross, of course, beside me as usual. We're delighted today to welcome a man who has worked at the club since the summer of 2022, would you believe? Where have those 2 years gone? After joining from AFC Wimbledon, and he currently serves as our first team coach. Welcome to the pod, Mr. James Oliver Pearce. How are you, sir?
Yeah, very good. Very good. It's been a good day for football and a nice weekend on the pitch for sure. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're literally talking to James a mere 24 hours after a cracking home win against Cambridge, which we'll get into a little bit later on the pod. But before we start, just a few disclaimers, really. We're all fully aware of the off-pitch stuff and the kind of week that we've had as supporters and obviously staff from James's point of view. But we're really doing this pod to focus on on-pitch stuff, you know, formations, tactics, which Roger's obviously buzzing about because, as we know, he's a real tactics man and formation stuff. But really, you know, we James has given up his time to talk to us, which we're incredibly grateful for, and obviously for you guys to be able to listen to the pod and you know, to a man who's there day in, day out at Reading Football Club and getting a team on the field. So, absolutely buzzing to have you on. And hopefully got some good questions for you, James, that you can give us some insight into what goes on down at the club day in, day out. Before we start, again, just a massive thanks, as always, to ZCZ Films, our you know, very generous sponsors. You give us a lot of love and support and generally help us to do what we do. And would you believe, Ross, this is our 601st episode officially. Not mine and yours, but just the pod in general, which is quite
Yeah, serious. And I'll just clarify of everything, pod extras, extra specials, all these kinds of things. So it's 370-something for the real pod, but just making sure no one's confused, Ben.
The real pod, yeah. I love that. If we ever do a real pod, that'll be a bonus. Right, let's get into it. So, James, first question for you, sir. I guess really that the best place to start is for you to kind of explain what your day-to-day role looks like, you know, whether or not you take ownership of a certain, you know, department in the squad, or whether or not it's just overall coaching, basically.
Yeah, I'd say, firstly, Ruben's been really good with letting me focus on a particular area. I think sometimes if you are trying to focus on everything, things can be missed when you're trying to just look at the overall picture. I think you need to understand everything that could happen and every eventuality. But if you've got people looking at the opposition and your own team around certain specific areas, then naturally your lens goes straight to there. So typically I look at after the in possession structure and how we play with the ball and how we try to create, score, build, etc. Ruben has final say, and we would go through everything before it's delivered to the squad. But I feel like now we've got to a point where we'll throw some ideas out, but largely we're on the same wavelength before we even go into them meetings. So we'll watch a lot of it on our own. We've got a really good good team around us that support with the video preparation and everything that goes into that. That's a really long process, and we're quite short staffed in that department now. So the fact that these guys are they'll finish a game if we're playing Saturday, Tuesday. He'll be doing the presentation until 2-3 o'clock in the morning just to make sure that it's ready for us to go, so we can be as clear and to the point with all of our meetings. So, yeah, I largely look after the in possession. That would involve obviously the workout on the pitch, and that can be a tactical delivery. It can be around your technical program to build some of your concepts, whether that's second, third man movements, deep runs and penetration, reading and manipulating pressure, things like that, as well as obviously trying to look at the team's individual performance from training and games and delivering meetings with individuals and small units.
I'm just looking at Ross there because he's literally like Christmas doing this, mate. So he's literally like, he's just lit up like a Christmas tree. He's absolutely buzzing now.
My U14s are signing up at the moment for their spring stuff. So all of this coaching information, you know, it's just exciting to hear from, you know, from the professionals what they're doing, all the way down. So James, with you doing in possession work, does Ruben take control of sort of out of possession work mostly, or is there another coach for that?
No, Ruben will lead the out of possession. He's excellent around the pressing strategies and his whole background. You can probably tell working with Ralf Hasenhüttl and
Right.
the counter pressure model, etc. He's extremely well versed and methodical around how that looks. We're actually top of every pressing category. So our PPDA, which is passes per defensive action, we're top in the league and up there around some of the best that there are for pressing. And in this division, there can be context because some teams play, some teams aren't interested in playing, so that takes out the passes per defensive action as well.
Right.
But Ruben will look after specifically the defensive game plan as well as the set plays. So when I say when Amadou celebrates for the Stevenage goal, I had nothing to do with that. That was a throw-in that Ruben worked on, and obviously it'd come to fruition.
Yeah. For sure. There were a few times, especially earlier in the season, where I feel like I noticed throw-ins either for Reading or against Reading were being used. There are times when the press was working really well, especially once that throw-in was down in, you know, the opposition's half. Reading were just excellent at getting the ball back in some of those positions. And we talked, I love that you brought up PPDA because we've talked a lot this season about sort of the style and how Reading are capable. One of the things I'm most impressed by with your in possession work is that Reading seem capable of attacking quickly, but also building play up and stylistically, they're just so balanced. Was that sort of like a goal going into the season for you? Did you go into the season thinking that you wanted to build a slow or fast build up team?
I think there's two ways to, or there's multiple ways you can look at it, but ultimately we have a relatively young squad. Young players are coming through the development programs now, don't particularly play direct football where they're just playing specifically for second balls. I feel like we've got some really good technicians, particularly in the middle of the pitch. So if we kick the ball long, we naturally take out some of their capabilities to help us progress in a more controlled way. That doesn't mean we won't ever look to go forward quickly and get in behind and play for the second ball, because otherwise we would potentially put ourselves in risk of conceding some sloppy goals, which can happen, will happen, but we want to alleviate the risk of that, I suppose. But no, with young players, you want them to be given a platform to show what they can do, and you try to take some of the fear away from that by putting the accountability onto yourself as a coach. If they do make a mistake by doing something that we've specifically asked them to do, that's on us, and we have to take the responsibility for that. So otherwise they go out fearful of making a mistake, and that's the last thing any young player or any player needs. You don't go to work to deliberately make a mistake. So if you can support them through that process, and we obviously had some difficult moments at the start of the season, but I feel like now that they're coming to a better understanding of what the game looks like in men's football for all of them, and also recognizing them pictures themselves as well.
Awesome. Yeah. Ben.
I mean, talking of expectations and, you know, accountability, and you know, you mentioned earlier on in the season, did you think it would be this difficult in this league, and did you kind of anticipate that the start would be, you know, quite slow to get across the messages that you guys wanted to get across the players? Because there's no doubt that it's definitely working, and we're seeing signs of that on the pitch, you know, in terms of the, you know, collective responsibility and the way that the players are performing. But you know, did you, when you sat down at the start of the season, did you think, okay, this is, we've got benchmarks in terms of where we want to be league position wise and performance and results and stuff? Or was it almost like a kind of, you know, learn on the job and with this group of players, you know, progressing, moving forward?
I think what we've shown over the course of the season is that we have learnt from mistakes that we've certainly made. There's obviously very well documented situations that have been out of our control that haven't helped. And sometimes what it can go all the way back to pre-season. People were only able to be signed in a really small window. Some of them not had much of a pre-season by the time they were signed. That becomes increasingly difficult to get them up to speed. We then lose, obviously, Sam Smith just before the season's due to begin, which you take away anyone's number nine at any level. That makes things really difficult, because even at the start of the season, we were creating enough situations and chances. We just weren't quite clinical enough, and that's no slight on the lads that were in them positions, because I still think that they've done a very good job considering, and I think we are now bearing the all of that's coming to fruition. If you look at Kelvin and yesterday, and he's contributed with a fair few goals now. I believe he's into double figures. Calen Vickers has gone on to Brighton now. Femi Azeez is having a really strong season. So you look at what we have to. Sometimes you have to go through some difficult periods and some adversity. And yes, no one was happy with where we wanted, where we were. Us certainly, we were always hoping to be in a much better position. And there are things that we learned, things that challenges that come our way. But yeah, I certainly feel like through adversity, you have two ways of looking at things, and you can either fold and go under, or you can learn from what's going on around you and try to make the very best of whatever situation you're in. And I certainly feel with the lads in particular, and certainly all of the staff, they've really tried to do that.
Speaking on, without going into any specifics, just speaking on that adversity, and sort of the bond between the team that we've seen on the field and, with the social media stuff and things like that. Would you say that, do you think that the team's bond this season is closer than some that you've seen before, in football because of the adversity they've gone through at all?
I certainly think that would play a part. Like I said, when things are difficult, you either can point the finger and have a blame culture, which there's only one end outcome to that, or you can try and really rally together. And I think the lads have certainly been inspired by, and I know it's a cliche, and I realise everybody says this stuff, but by the fact that the fans have really fought for this football club, and that can't go unnoticed. And I think you see, I noticed Harvey Nibs had sent out a post yesterday on Instagram or Twitter, one of the two. And I think that just really underlines it. And naturally, I think whenever no one expects everyone to win every football game, I think if you can see the values and the behaviours that you associate with a Reading side as Reading people, then people can tolerate that, even if there are mistakes along the way. And I do think that you look at the team. They're young, they're energetic, they're aggressive, they're on the front foot. And sometimes we get bad games, and sometimes we don't get the result. Shrewsbury, as an example, scored two goals that have an XG that are very small. We're knocking on the door all second half, and we just can't score the goal that at least gets a point from the game, similar to Wickham. But I do feel that the lads have really pulled together as time goes on. Naturally, you spend a lot of time together, probably more than you spend with your families in a football environment. You get to know each other as people, and I think that sometimes goes missing in football. That behind every football player, every analyst, every physio, there's a person that's got a very real life going on behind what they do day to day. So you learn what's going on with them, and you try to support them. And sometimes you just have to support that one individual in one way, and all of a sudden they're right on side. And I don't think that that's necessarily been because of something that we've done, but I think it's just been a general feel of the whole football club, from the supporters to the players to the staff this season.
I mean, we talked about, you mentioned the kind of the start earlier on in the season, and certainly from my point of view, Ross, not so much. I was quite critical of Ruben for sure, and maybe looking back, that was probably a little bit harsh and frustration, and I hold my hands up and say I was probably too quick really in terms of my judgments there. But one thing that I think we've all agreed on as a fan base is the likability of the man and the way that he's kind of dealt with what we would imagine to be extreme pressure situations to work in. You talked a little bit earlier about, his kind of grounding with Ralph and kind of the way, I was going to say a surname, but I always get it wrong, so I just go first name.
It's
call it
that weird when
Ralph.
It's like Rang Nick or, Anyway, go on.
Yeah, exactly. I just, I'm
No,
not,
this
I'm
one
not
was
good with that.
Hasenhüttl.
Oh gosh, I'm so far off.
I wouldn't have said that. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have said that. Oh yeah, I mean, James E. what I was talking about, Ross. You just
We've got our preview clip anyway.
But
carry on.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I guess really the question is how does his style overall as a manager differ from, maybe other managers or head coaches that you've worked with in your career so far?
I mean, there's He's obviously very clear on the style that he wants to play, and his appreciation of technology and how to use that is very good. He's very organized, he's very methodical. If I showed you the training and game model databases that we've got throughout the season in a 4-2-2-2, a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1, as the detail and the clips that we've always got to refer back to is incredible. He has clips from sessions that he would have done with Karabag, Copenhagen, going back years and years now. So these are massive football clubs that he has experience of working with, and levels of players that he's delivered these practices to. And believe me, if players at that level that think that your session isn't good or up to scratch, they're very quick to tell you, whether that's through the actual words or their body language in general. But no, I think what you've seen with Ruben this year is what you get. I think he's handled the whole thing that's been going around the whole football club this season incredibly well, and I really do think he's helped to unite everybody together. He's never used it as an excuse, even when, with all due respect, that would have been a really easy situation to refer back to. I think we've all seen it said and done before, so he hasn't done that, and I think that's a real credit to him. And now I think that you start to see that process, and I know process is a really boring word for football fans to understand, but it really does take a bit of time to get to where you need it to, especially at the starting point that we had this season. So we're by no means where we want to be, but we're certainly a lot further along, and that development has certainly been seen on and off the pitch, I think, throughout the season.
I think you all have though, James. Like, as you said earlier, it's you're taking on a lot more responsibility now because of, potentially, obviously the people leaving earlier on in the season and stuff. So I think as a coaching group, for me, the way you've dealt with this has been fantastic, and I'll continue to do it. And I think, I don't speak for every fan, obviously, but myself and Ross are pretty much aligned. And it's been a lot more enjoyable in recent weeks on the pitch, which is, all we really care about as football fans at the end of the day, in terms of trying to
It's,
win
yeah.
matches and being semi-entertaining. So yeah, it's been great to have that. And obviously, Ross asked you about the bond earlier on, so yeah, it's been really
I would
positive.
agree with that. It's been the best football to watch on the pitch for a few seasons, this season for sure. Which has been, obviously football's about winning games at the end of the day, but it is always nice to come and be entertained as well. Speaking about those formations that you briefly mentioned, so you mentioned a 4-2-2-2, a 4-3-3, and the 4-2-3-1. So I have a couple questions there, really. It seems like you guys are kind of moved towards a 4-2-3-1 now with that sort of 4-3-3, 4-1-1, 4-1-4-1 sort of structure to it. When you're making those decisions. It's probably a mix of all these things, but are you making those based on personnel available often, or more on like what you're trying to do tactically? Why do formation changes happen during the season, in your opinion?
Do you want me to start with a 4-2-2-2?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, that works.
Yeah, well, we felt obviously the 4-2-2-2, obviously it divided a lot of opinion, I'd say, and that was a subject of question, and rightly so. When results aren't going well, you expect them questions to be thrown your way. I think when you're playing against teams that are particularly possession based and want to build, you'll naturally see a lot of teams adopt a form of 4-2-2-2 in terms of pressure. Quite often you might see a 4-1-3-2, and we did that with one of our sixes jumping up into the next line of pressure as the ball travelled. But what we noticed, obviously, not quite early, we think, but when we made the changes, that we weren't particularly landing on a lot of second ball. So we would get pressure, we'd try to dictate play, but through our pressure, but when the ball inevitably then got kicked long, we didn't control the second action in the middle of the pitch. So although we forced the issue for them to not be able to build in a structured way, we lost the second ball at times then. We have still adopted a 4-2-2 pressure in different situations through the season. We went to Brighton and we played a form of a 4-1-3-2 in the EFL Trophy. We played a 4-1-3-2 quite often against a back four structure, we've done that, because you get earlier access to the two centre backs and the ball naturally, if a team wants to build. So that being said, on us recognising the second balls and that them situations, we wanted to make sure that we had that extra man in midfield. The 4-2-3-1, 4-1-4-1, 4-3-3 cannot is everything is contextual to the personnel you got available, the opposition that you're playing against, and the probably the areas that you want to try to exploit within the game. If we feel that we can obviously exploit the almost the false fullback position, Wingy gets a lot of credit for that, and Charlie does it really well on the left hand side, and actually the 4-2-3-1 lends a little bit more to that. If we want to try to play in between their midfield and their defensive line, then a 4-3-3 naturally gives you that positional superiority, I suppose. So we it, it's a lot of it can be contextual. Sometimes your in possession structure can look different to your out of possession. Against Derby, we started in a 4-3-3. They put us under a lot of pressure in the first half, and they took away what we wanted to do, because they're a good side and teams aren't going to let you have it your own way. So we adapted at the start of the second half. We obviously concede. We all know what the decisions were like in that game, and Ruben won't talk about it, but I will. So yeah, the free kick obviously arguably offside, but the reaction was really good, and I thought at the start of the second half we had a much better level of control in the game. And then obviously the game pans out in a different way. But yeah, we do flip between multiple systems in that sense. And yeah, like I said, personnel areas of the pitch that you want to overload, and sometimes you can be in a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1. And I know that we've got these sort of questions coming, but where we move the fullbacks into
I was just
specific
going to move on
positions.
there. Yeah. So if this transition's nice, because I wanted to pick up, you mentioned Wing moving back into that fullback spot, which I think Wing's been really good with that. And then yesterday, against Cambridge, I noticed Charlie doing it, getting more space to do it more often. And I was really impressed by how well he can do it too. What a player. Has that sort of like move to get those fullbacks inside, has that come sort of as a result of knowing that Wing can get out there well, or is there something in particular that you guys are looking for when fullbacks do move inside? And by the way, well, I never thought I'd see Reading using inverted fullbacks and everything. So this great coaching, guys. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, it first of all, we're really fortunate some of our personnel are capable of operating in them areas. So Yids Cook goes in there really comfortably, Clinton goes in there really well. And Jarrell is getting better and better at moving into them positions. So Clinton yesterday took up that position really well, and sometimes it can be the areas of the pitch that we want to exploit, and actually some rotation. If a team's man orientated and they really want to press you with just following their men around, if you take them into positions that are a little bit more unnatural, that you get that little bit of hesitation and crossover, that you might be able to get that split second where Wingy can play forward or Clinton can receive it and turn. There's one goal I remember specifically, the Exeter game at home. Wingy plays the ball into, it's either Harvey or Sam, it's Sam. He plays it into Clinton, who's playing as an out and out number 10, who plays Harvey in behind.
That was I
So
think that was the first time I noticed just how well that was working and just how good Clinton could be at that too. I mean, his body's huge, and he can win those like aerial balls too. So yeah.
yeah, and sometimes it might be that you want to overload the central area because of it. Sometimes it might be, without trying to give everything away, but you might want Femi in a 1v1, and naturally, if you clear the line of pass, Femi might have the easier 1v1, or if he gets it to feet like he did yesterday for the first goal, because Clinton's taken that space. He tries to play it around the corner because Clinton's in a distance where he can make the corner box run. Follows his pass, he loses it, follows it, wins it back, plays Harvey on the second movement, and then we obviously end up getting the goal through that. Not everything's perfect, and you will turn the ball over within your patterns, but them little positions and that the lads feeling comfortable, and it's not all this is what you're going to do then. It's like it is principle based. It's about them reading and manipulating the pressure, and more often than not, it's about making sure that the distances from the pass and the area of the pitch that we're in aren't too big. So if we do lose it, again, going back to the PPDA, that we're able to react counter press, because quite often, as soon as you lose it, if you react quickly and win it back, as we did for the first goal, your team start to move as they feel like they're going to win possession, and straight away the gap that was maybe 2 yards is now 4 yards, and you can get through that gap. So that's really important. We had a couple games earlier in the year, Barnsley at home, where we thought that we Wingy was doing pulling out into them positions really well, but we got counter-attacked 4 times early in the second half, because naturally midfielders pull into that position, they then want to go and join the attack. So we had to create the understanding that if we're going to pull into them positions, you have to hold that position until you naturally fill in your positions again, because otherwise the transition, the ball gets turned in behind and no one's there, and it becomes a real big problem for us. And actually, we didn't concede the goal from that, but we could have conceded a goal from that. So we learned from that game, and the lads learned from that, and them situations will occur potentially from time to time, but are far less frequent now.
I mean, I'm really glad you mentioned Clinton, because obviously we've been quite glad about his. We call it a redemption arc. That's a bit serious, really, but he's got to be one of the most improved players in that team over the course of this season for sure. And he seems like a very likable lad as well, which is great. But he's kind of gradually progressed, I think, as the season has got on, really. Because we felt that his start was pretty shaky. I mean, talking about individuals, and one man that I could talk about for a long time, Sam Smith, easily the most handsome man in Berkshire, of course. But also, the fact that he's been so good in this hold-up play. What makes him so good at that? Is it something that you work on and train? Is it a natural talent? Is it just kind of he's just improved because of the way that we're set up formation-wise at the club? Like, why, James? Please answer me.
I told him this yesterday, actually, funnily enough, just before the game. I said, I'm going to be asked this question tomorrow, Sam. Just so you know, I'm going to tell them that you've got a really good number 10 that chases your first touch every time. So, no, in all seriousness, I think there's. I didn't know Sam before this spell, and he obviously come through the academy here. He's then left and had a different career path away from Reading before he's come back. And I think what people have to realise is that, like with anything, your development's never linear. It's all there's loads of bumps in the road, and you've got to sometime go out and get them experiences. He's gone, learned his trade at different clubs at different levels, and had big, strong centre halves climbing all over and trying to bump him. And them experiences are massive. So when he now does get a centre back that wants to try to be aggressive and tight to him, it might be more around the timing of his movement into the space, not allowing the defender to be too tight. It's how he uses his body and the time that he decides to make contact with the opponent, the line of approach that he takes to come and meet the ball. For anyone to be good at link up play, you have to have players to link up with. There was a situation yesterday where Amadou played the ball in the first half to Sam's feet. It was Femi's chance where he got released before he scored. Amadou's played it into Sam. Sam's left his movement late, arrived, set the ball. Charlie's arrived as the six on the far side for the third man layup or set to release Femi into the space. So, yeah, it's invaluable for any number nine to be able to look after the ball. And we're fortunate that ours is doing a really good job of it this year, and there's areas that he can definitely improve on, as there is with everyone. But he gives so much to the team in that sense, and our record with him in the team has been pretty strong for this season, I'd say. So, yeah.
I'm pleased as well, James, because I at the start of the season, I was like, I'm always really dubious when players go back or when managers go back, to where they've left, because I would say never go back. But I'm really pleased he's kind of bucking that trend, because he's been absolutely phenomenal. And like, as you reminded us, he's been out injured for quite a long period of time, sort of, just after the start. And he's, you know, I hope he just scores as many goals as he can, really, just for him, because he's just amazing. Honestly, he's one of my favourite players at the club at the moment.
He deserves it. He's a great guy to work with, Ben. He really is.
He looks it as well. Like he, and obviously, I think from the emotional attachment with him being there previously, it's great. So, long may that continue, Mr. Sam Smith, please. And don't listen to James. You're number nine. Your number 10's not that good anyway. So it's all good. It's all fine. I guess really another player that I want to talk about, and I'm doing this because Ross won't be able to get this question out because he absolutely loves this player and has been very, very glowing about him. And we all have, because he's had a fantastic season and, you know, a difficult period at the club. Tyler Bindon. I mean, what
a player.
What's kind of inspired his, I say revamp, but, you know, why has he been so good this season? What is it as kind of, progressed as the games have gone on for him, because he looks like he's been playing five, six seasons, and it's the first season he's been there.
Yeah, Tyler's another one. I mean, they all are, but Tyler's only recently turned 19, and he's got an incredible support system behind him with his family, and they're amazing with their support and how they help him with his career. And he's a really young man. He's obviously not long been in England himself, etc. as well. So he's had all of them different experiences to go by. I think he studies his own performance as well as top level players. And naturally, with any footballer, they'll all aspire to get to the highest level they possibly can. I remember that we played a home game and he was doing his thing where he puts his foot on the ball and he waits for the pressure, and we're waiting for people to jump, because sometimes you just need a trigger to start your build up or start your attack. And if a team's not willing to do that, you have to be patient enough to provoke the pressure to get somebody to move out of their slot, or then go into just circulating the ball until someone jumps by through your ball speed. And I remember one home game at halftime, he was being booed, funnily enough, because he was doing it. And I understand people want the ball forward. The game's 0-0, or we're drawing, or we certainly weren't losing. I remember that. And I said to him, Tyler, look, don't worry about it. You're doing the right thing. And he just said, oh, James, I didn't notice. I'm just focusing on what I've got to do. So to have that level of composure as a 19-year-old is outstanding. And he's also, the season's gone on. He's had some really, he had to fill in at right back for us because we were particularly light in that position at one point. He was at right centre back, then he's at left centre back. His first game at left centre back, I think, might have been Portsmouth at home. He's had the Blackpool away experience where it was a bit of crash bang wallop, and we didn't deal with the direct play anywhere near well enough. They set up to expose our two young centre halves, and that hurt a lot that day for them as individuals and us as a collective and you guys as fans. It was a really difficult moment. But that experience, I can certainly say, Nelson Abbey developed 4 or 5 times quicker just through that one game. And he now has strategies to deal with a direct ball. He felt like he had to go up and compete for them. He didn't realise he could just take him under the ball. He could get somebody to protect him. He could call his name and drop to let them flick it on. And just because he might not have won the ball, sometimes it's on the players that are around you not covering behind. So centre forwards, particularly that are target players, if they don't win headers and link the ball and win flick-ons, then they wouldn't have any use in the team. So they're gonna do that from time to time. But he develops so many strategies, as did Tyler, from that one game to deal with them scenarios. And for me, that was a pivotal moment in his development. And it's obviously, he's flown since then, and he's obviously a huge football club now. He still come back even yesterday to support the lads, and still contacts the staff regularly as well. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's really impressive from Tyler. Sorry, I realise I've gone off on a little bit of a tangent there. But great. He's
nice. I mean, it's good. Like, you know, we kind of mentioned and felt that, you know, Abbey leaving, which was at the time a huge loss, you know, with all due respect to him, the job that Tyler and Amadou have done in recent weeks, you know, obviously you'd always want a player of Nelson Abbey's quality in the squad and to be able to call him that. But they've coped so well and more with that loss, and have really, I say stepped up, that's wrong because they were stepping up before, but they just look really accomplished. And I think yesterday was the first time, it was the highest ever win without conceding for something like 15, 16 years or something. And that tells you everything you need to know, really, in terms of these players and the, you know, the defensive unit that we've been able to, well, I say we, it's got nothing to do with us. We just pay our money to watch it. But for you guys as coaching and stuff to be able to cope with it. So, yeah, it's been great to watch him grow and obviously be an international, which is still a really sore point for Ross because he was hoping he was going to go to USA and obviously didn't. So we had to get over that with Ross collectively. Really.
It's been all right. He's just a fantastic player. I'm just about getting over it now. I've had a few months, so, you know, we're working it out. Changing tack a little bit then, what's your philosophy with the use of the goalkeeper in the build-up? And so I've noticed Button and Pereira both seem to be pretty proficient with the ball at their feet. I think their style graphs have them pretty far towards those, you know, those sorts of features. They're good at sweeping, good at using their feet and things like that. Do you have anything in particular that, you know, do you like your goalkeeper to get involved with the build-up? I guess what's, without giving too much away, obviously, what's your philosophy there?
We are obviously a team that typically will try to build from goal kicks and build from low situations. We do have strategies to obviously go longer. There's different ways to look at it. On Tuesday night away to Derby, we felt in the first half as much as Derby were a good side, we allowed them to gain more pressure higher up the pitch because we went backwards too often. And that can sometimes be because we obviously encourage building up through the keeper. Sometimes it's our movement in the angles we give as centre-backs or as full-backs, as sixes, as etc. or higher up the pitch. I think it's really contextual to the other team's pressure. We expected, funnily enough, Cambridge didn't set up the way we expected them to yesterday. We expected more of a 4-4-2 mid block, but also being high in a 4-1-3-2 from goal kick. So we had certain strategies we wanted to work on against them. We actually intended to use Joel, obviously yesterday, to make a back three in our build up so that we could manipulate where the sixes could come out of the we call it the shadows of the nines, so that we could almost be able to play round their block as opposed to and then move the fullbacks in or the wingers in late and quick into the next spaces in the higher line. So it's contextual. You have to have players, goalkeepers with the capabilities to do so. I think so much so now that goalkeepers are quite often involved in possessions. We do obviously certain games that we would expect them to use their feet on. Sometimes we only allow them to have one touch so that the players giving the ball back will have to show some good pass appreciation back to them. Their angle to receive will have to be, he can't just come down the line of the ball and play on the same side because otherwise the pressure is going to be there. Sometimes he has to move away and think like an outfield player. And sometimes you might put them on two touches so that, again, their angles, their distances, or how they wait and pause on the ball. We do a lot of work on that, and obviously we're big on building up in a controlled way. Sam is a really good link-up player, but he's also not just a target man. He wants space to run into. He wants the ball played into his body, not up, just up by his neck. And if we just start doing that, then he's not going to be able to flourish either. So it's a combined thing for the team. Fortunately, we've got three goalkeepers that have been in our squad this season that are all proficient with their feet, Kanaya included in that.
Speaking about the sixes, obviously this season we've been blessed really in terms of young center mids, right? We've got two pretty impressive ones in Savage and Craig, and I'm not obviously going to ask you to join in Ben's debate about which of them should start each week, but how does using Savage or Craig in that double pivot or in the midfield in general as sixes, how does that alter what we can do in and out of possession, or does it not really alter it to you? Like, is that not really something that you guys are worried about?
I think both of them have got to a level where they've both performed really well for long periods this season. You've actually got a left footer and a right footer, so sometimes that balance can create different things for you. both of them have developed in areas that were maybe they weren't as strong at earlier in the year, through their experiences, through training, through being with their teammates, the demands you set on them. But again, both of them, what I think they've both done really well, and this sometimes, not whether you've got a preference or not as fans, it's not really for me to say. But I think they've pushed each other really hard this year, and I think that's a massive compliment to them, that I think that they've both performed really well as really young players who are certainly both going to have really good careers. Their attitude, their energy, their work ethic, and their styles are yeah, they've been a real pleasure. So long may that continue. We're really fortunate to have two young prospects coming through in that position. They're not easy to find. So we're really fortunate in that position.
100% crucial, crucial position. Not easy to find players, and we've got two of them. So, yeah, credit to you guys and your coaching with them and their development this season. Speaking of development, are there any standout players in the under-21s that you think we might not be paying attention to at the moment? I don't know how much interaction, obviously, you get to have with Noel Hunt and the academy, but is there anybody that you're hearing through the club that maybe we're not concentrating on yet?
First of all, Noel, Jilksy, Ledge, all of the guys, Scotty that works with Noel, and all of the team behind the team there, Luca, that does the sports science, etc. They're brilliant, and they've done such an incredible job. And again, and we've sort of harped on about it throughout this whole conversation, but they are, without them this season, with your Nelson Abbeys, Kalen Vickers, Kelvin E, Kelvin A, Jarrell, Matty Carson, all of these players that have con Michael Craig, Tavonge, these players have contributed hugely to our season as a football club. And with everything that's gone on, the fact that we've had them players to step up and perform the way they have is a massive, massive tribute to yes, the players, but the academy staff that have supported their development for years and years and years. Kalen Vickers has been here since he was allowed to play football at an academy level. So it's I can't speak highly enough of the work that they've done. They've got a huge track record that these guys have producing players that supersedes them as well, with Eamon Dolan and the work that he did, and the legacy that he's left behind. The academy at Reading have always been incredible. I won't single out any individual player because I don't think that's fair. We sit with Noel every day. He's in all of our morning meetings. He comes up once or twice a day. On top of that, they're always welcome to training. We will go and watch some of their training sessions. Often we'll be at games where time and schedules allow. And if we've been away, we was at a hotel in, I think it was the Preston Marriott Hotel, and we had a live stream to their
All
game against
right.
Leeds. And yeah, with like th
Awesome.
these we're super interested. And on top of that, and one of the things that I didn't mention earlier, and it probably should have been, the there's one thing having young players, and then there's another thing using them. And Ruben has shown an incredible level of trust to put these young players in. I believe we were the second youngest average age side behind Peterborough. We're doing an incredible job as well, this season
I
at
think
one
you're
point.
right.
So.
I've only noticed like one team all year that's got a younger average age than us. I think that was Peterborough. So yeah, really impressive. Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
And that, no, I was going to say that has been great, because obviously previous managers have not, you know, not even before your time, have not really invested in the youth or trusted the youth as such. And there were opportunities, you know, in the last sort of 5, 6 years where there could have been younger players coming through rather than potentially signing them. So it's great for us as fans to have, you know, to have those young players coming through and seeing them on the pitch, really. I mean, you know, I guess from your point of view, you talked a lot about the relationships you have with other staff members and how, you know, cohesive the coaching unit is. Obviously, you're currently first team coach with us, and I've been for what, 2 years or so. Do you have your own aspirations to be your own man one day in terms of, you know, the number one in the dugout, or are you quite happy to just, and I'm not saying in Nicky Rubin's job at all, but like, you know, just generally, do you have that career progression and ambition in mind to want to do it on your own?
I think that in these situations, I think people try to be politically correct. And I'm 32, and I certainly at some point in my career would like to think that I can get myself to a level where I can manage a team. Right here, right now, and again, this maybe is the cliche thing to say, I'm learning loads, I'm getting loads of experience, experiences that most people my age they just don't get. One, through the level of the coaching that I'm getting to do with the level of players. Also, the experiences that I've had with the football club over the last 18 months or so has been something I probably wasn't expecting either. But no, 100%, I certainly would like to manage one day. And yeah, we'll see whenever that time comes. I'd like to think I've given myself a load of experience. That's the one benefit of not having a playing career, is I started coaching obviously a lot earlier. I was in Woking's Academy at 18, 19. Weren't good enough. That part of their coaching, their college course was to do your level two. And a coaching company called SCL were running that course at the time. And they said if I was a little bit better at college and committed to it, I was living in Croydon, travelling to Guildford every day. They would give me a job if I committed to it after an internal assessment. Did that. They then fast-tracked me to my UEFA B. You could only get on it when you was 20. Okay. I was accepted straight away. And back then it was a different sort of structure to what it is now. Now you get sort of in situ, they call it support. Back then it was 6 months. You're in six times or so over that period for a couple of days each time. And then at the end of it, you pass or fail. And it was as simple as that. There's 24 of us. I was one of, if not the youngest on that course at the time. Only 8 of us passed. I was fortunate enough to be one of them.
Wow.
And then off the back of that, I was asked to do my UEFA A license pretty quickly after. I've gained a lot of experience over that time. I've been able to do my advanced youth award, which is an absolutely outstanding course, because it doesn't necessarily just focus on football. It looks at the psychology of individuals, the physical side of the game. I'm a really big believer in the social aspect of it and the psychological side of things, because I think times are becoming incredibly more difficult. Young players in particular have got a lot of distractions, social media, phones, etc. And I think that you can either go, it's really tough for them, or you can try and put them in situations that are incredibly supportive. We've put some initiatives together with young players. I know, Ross, you're working with some young players yourself. So we had player-led games from 9s all the way through to 18s. They weren't allowed a coach all day at the game. They had to set up the pitch. They had to meet the officials, greet the opposition. Wow. Manage substitutions, teams, clean up the environment after, etc. And there was a long process into getting them ready to experience that. But we gave them the foundation to experience that and put them in an environment where they could fail and not be scrutinized for it in a negative way. And they could also thrive. Some of them just grew as leaders. And worst case, the chances of becoming a professional footballer, as we know, are so low that they get the life skill that they just might not get. It's a development program, and you're trying to develop multiple areas. So, I know I've gone off maybe on a...
No, this is actually really interesting. This is really interesting because one of the most, like, I've personally found the coaching courses that I've done, and they've been much lower down, and obviously with US soccer rather than UEFA football. they have been some of the most interesting courses I've done, yes, for football reasons, but also, like you're saying, in terms of psychology, in terms of trying to understand, you know, how to motivate people and things like that. And I think I actually would say that to anyone who's like interested in football, even like lower down, like coaching courses and things could be really interesting, just to see if that's something that you're interested in, because we always need more coaches. So yeah, sorry, Ben, carry on.
No, just kind of final bit, really. You kind of talked a lot about your career up until this point in terms of being fast-tracked and doing those courses and stuff. And it's intense, right? You know, you sound like you're a student of the game and you're always trying to learn and kind of, you know, analyze different parts of the game itself. How do you switch off? What do you do to go, right, no more football for today? I'm going to go and do something else. What is it that kind of ground you in that respect?
Well, I'm sat here with my partner's just behind the screen, but I find that really difficult for 9-10 months, however long the football season lasts. I think you have to be all in, because there's so many people that rely on you for part of their week that brings so much joy or frustration. It brings out all these emotions, but I think we have a duty to give as much as we can. I'm fortunate enough to be in a situation where I can try to affect the outcome of games and people's, hopefully people's careers, as players and as staff, etc. I find it really difficult to switch off. I've got 4 young children myself. My youngest was born on the 23rd of December, 22nd of December.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I was at...
That's a hectic Christmas, right? Yeah. In the Oliver Pierce household, that's mad.
And I was at Wigan the next morning. So,
goodness.
No way.
Yeah, my partner wasn't best pleased at the time, but she understands that it's... Yeah, when I'm home, I will try to be as present as I can be. Quite often you get back and there's still some more things to watch, because you just don't want... You want to leave as many things covered as possible. And quite often I'll have to wait till she's decided that she's going to go to bed to sit up for another hour or so to go through things. But I've got my 4 children and my family. I'm looking forward to the end of the season, because I've... Fingers crossed with everything goes the way we all hope it does, in every aspect. And then you can give some time back to your family at that point. So, that's largely it for me. And then I end up watching football all day if I can. Like,
well, this is it. Yeah, I mean, I simplify slightly because I get told off for doing these pods. So just like, I think I need to build my own studio. Ross is pretty much kitted out, but for me, I get constantly told off. Very last one for you. It would be remiss of us to not ask you about, or remiss of us to not ask you about the result yesterday. How pleasing was that in terms of just, you know, the result, but the performance, but also, you know, the week that we've all had, really, with this football club. You know, how delighted were you at sort of, you know, 5 o'clock yesterday?
Any win feels good. I'm not trying to take his words, but I'd echo what Harvey said. I think that yesterday was about a much bigger thing than us and the football. It was about the fans and everything that they've done to try and keep this club moving in the right direction. And you really did feel that. It was our largest crowd of the season. We obviously had a big crowd at home to Wickham in the previous game, and we didn't get the result that we wanted, nor that we felt that we deserved either. But it's a massive result in terms of what happened at the bottom. Nobody won. So yeah, we increased the distance between us and them. It improved our goal difference. We let, after everything that had gone on throughout the week and the difficulties that everyone had faced, the frustration of Tuesday night, not taking something from the game. I didn't think we played particularly well, and we were all in agreement of that. By our own standards, we expect to play better than that, and we'd hope to play better. But the game was taken away from us in a way that we couldn't control so much. Then you get Thursday and everything that come out on Wednesday night, Thursday. The players they're supposed to be getting ready to fight for the rest of the season, and we're trying to push them on. And You've got the people, human beings, right? We've mentioned that before. They're going to come in, and it creates different feelings for them. I don't know what their feelings are, but it creates different feelings. I'm sure it did. And then you get Saturday, where just everybody in that stadium, in a red from a Reading contingent, was just, you could see how happy they were. People leaving the ground. I get to come on here after a win rather than a really bad free game, so that's always a positive. And no, that's the biggest thing. It helps us in trying to secure what we need to secure. But it makes it just gives a positive finish to the end of the week. So we're by nowhere near finished. We need to go and perform again and again before now and the end of the season, and see where that takes us. But it was another step in the direction that we need to take, hopefully, as a from a football side and as a football club.
Yeah, 100%.
Well, listen, that it seems fitting to round it off on that, really positive note. And, long may that continue, really. We've got, what, 7 games left, something like that. And you've got a bit of a break now between now and Northampton, which is 29th, is it? Good Friday, maybe?
Yes.
It's going to come around real quick, isn't it? But, listen, we really appreciate you coming on. We're fully aware that you don't have to, but one thing we've tried to do throughout the season is get sort of staff members on, and we had Tim on earlier on in the season to talk about the kits and stuff. And, we kind of want that relationship, but it's more important that you guys have that relationship with the fans as well. And we're just sort of two people with microphones that try and do that. But we are, we're massively indebted to you coming on the podcast.
Yep.
And massively indebted to everything that you're doing for the football club and with those group of players. And, we see it now, and we get it. And as you said, we're gonna stick together as much as we possibly can and get there. And when we do get there, it's gonna be some nights, put it that way. So, listen, thank you so much for your time tonight, James. Really, really appreciate it. And as always, thanks to Ross for chipping in with some reasonably good questions. And we'll go from there, really. But we will have a pod next, probably this week coming up. I reckon there's gonna be something to talk about midweek. So we'll do like our next normal pod from there. Until then, thank you so much, James. Hope you have a good rest of your weekend. And hopefully we'll see you soon, mate.
No, thank you, guys. And I just wanted to touch on one thing you mentioned there, Ben. No one's indebted to anyone. This has been a massive, massive team effort for the last God knows how long now. So, we really appreciate the support. Trust me, it does mean the world to us, and we all want to achieve the same thing, right? And we all want to see the team performing and the club going in a positive direction. So we're a lot stronger together. So if we can just keep that going for these final 6 weeks or so, whatever's left of the season now, we'll certainly get there, and we'll, like you said, we'll enjoy the party that comes with it at the end of the season, hopefully.
Awesome.
Nice one. Thanks, James. And thanks to everyone for listening. As always, we will see you next time on the Tyler Stem podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Come on, you Arts.